You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Hey guys, thanks for joining us on the Best Practice Show, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over the world. Special, crazy special week. We are out here for the Seattle Study Club Symposium, the 25th anniversary, which is an amazing place. It's called the Legacy Tour, with some of the best speakers, educators, influencers in the world, and you're going to see this. Today's show is no different. I got two of my favorite of all time. And I always say best for last, right? No offense to our other guests, but I love these guys. And if you've ever seen them speak, you love them too. So please do not miss this. So do us a favor, hit the share button, and we'll see you in a few seconds.
The Best Practices Show with Kirk Behrendt is brought to you exclusively by ACT Dental, the ultimate provider of dental practice management solutions for dentists and their teams. ACT Dental is committed to helping you build a better practice and a better life. If you are looking to grow your production, motivate your team, get back on track, and create the practice you've always dreamed about, look no further. Give us a call at 800-851-8186 or visit us at actdental.com.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show. Thank you so much for tuning in for this crazy special week. We are at the Seattle Study Club Symposium, where all of the best speakers in the world come. This is the 25th anniversary, called the Legacy Tour, here at the La Quinta in Palm Springs, California. It's crazy special. And if you haven't been, you got to go. And so one of the benefits for me is I just get to hang out, and I get all of the residue of their brilliance just falling off on me. So I am so incredibly grateful to call you guys my dear friends. I love these men in a friendly way. They've become great mentors of mine. And today we're just going to wrap it up and talk about how special this event is, this time in dentistry, some of the things you guys are excited about. But I know who you guys are. I've had you on the show. But for those of you, we got a lot of dental students watching. If people don't know who you are, tell us a little bit about who you are and where you practice.
Okay. So I'm Bill Robbins. I'm a restorative dentist in San Antonio. I was in academics for 25 years, and about 20 years ago left academics for full-time private practice. That's where I've been since. So I've got a wonderful restorative practice with one partner and two associates in San Antonio, and we just live the dream in San Antonio.
That's awesome.
I'm Bob Margis. I practice full-time in Des Moines, Iowa, having been there for about 30 years, practicing for 32, and have a general restorative practice, work 3 days a week, and I'm out here for the annual symposium and having a great time. My good friend Bill Robbins and Kirk Behrendt.
Oh, man, it's so much fun. And you recently just got a website, which I heard, which is pretty cool.
Yes, I did.
Because there was an argument. We didn't even know if you were really a dentist.
Yeah. And he started using an air handpiece, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't hear that.
He just got rid of the one with the cords that go up and down. And he got an air rotor.
Fix it again. Right?
To go with the website.
Oh, isn't that
That's
awesome?
Exactly right.
Awesome.
Yes.
Now, you guys are near and dear to my heart because I've got a chance to know you guys in the last 10 years. But let's just start with this. This is a crazy special place. Would you not agree?
Yeah.
We are on day 3. What happens at Symposium, and then we're going to drill down to what you guys are excited about. What have you experienced in 3 days here?
It's an interesting symposium because it's called a Legacy Tour.
Yeah.
And that means that they're getting speakers that have been speakers for other symposia back, right, and having shorter programs, but having a large group of famous lecturers from all over the world. It's an amazing program. Right. And since it's the Legacy, it's sort of a mixture of dentistry and heart. And so what I've really loved about this is there's been a little more emphasis on the heart side,
yes,
the legacy side. And we've gotten to see a lot of really famous speakers that we admire and love to hear. And they've shown clinical dentistry, but they've also, most of them, have shown a piece of their lives, too, that we don't get to normally see. So that part, for me, that's the best part of the symposium, is relationships anyway.
Yeah.
And we've gotten to see it more from the speakers this year, which I really enjoyed.
That is very cool. And both of you guys were on the main stage, so it's a special time. So, Bob, what's your perspective when you look at this?
Yeah, you know, I agree with Bill. You know, the people here are like our mentors, who we grew up looking at and learning from. Then to be on the stage with some of them, it's almost like surreal.
Yeah.
And so for me, whether I'm speaking or not, I never miss Seattle Study Club supporters, as Bill doesn't either. Why? We're here to learn, just like, you know, the people here are learning to learn, the attendees. Even though we're on the program, I know Bill's been in the meeting the whole time. I've been in the meeting the whole time. Why? I want to continually learn. And I think to be a continual student is really important. You can't think that you know everything. That's for sure.
No, you can't. You can't. You got to be on the learning edge, too. Now, I'm going to piggyback, too, because what's so much fun is that after this, we're all going to probably go over the bar. There's not a lot of handshaking here. You know, there's a lot of hugging, which is pretty special. You don't get that in other meetings. You go to a lot of meetings and just there's not a lot of what you see here, which is crazy special.
Yeah. Actually, I don't go to a lot of meetings because I don't like big meetings. So that's one good thing about being an old guy. I don't have to go to big meetings anymore. So I go to study clubs, and I go to a couple of nice meetings in Chicago, and I always come to this one. So for me, that's kind of my... And then I get my CE in smaller doses. I was at a course with four people last week in an office, just me and three other people. So that's sort of how I get my continuing education now.
Yeah, that is awesome. That is awesome. And Bob, what are your thoughts when you come here, like as far as the relationships go?
Yeah, you know, it's always good to see our friends, meet new ones, and try to help the people that are here. But, you know, when I get to be with Bill Robb, we don't get to see each other as much as we should.
Yeah.
Life is short because it generally gives me great pleasure to see a smile on his face. And it's like we picked up where we left off the last time we saw each other.
Yeah.
We go to the Restorative Academy every year. It's one of the meetings we love going to, the Seattle Study Club. And I get to see him again in a month.
Yeah.
So really, it's more like, you know, it sounds kind of like corny, but it's like a family.
Yep.
And every time you go, it's like a big family reunion.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, come on. When do we not laugh? I mean, you walk away with so much pleasure and so much fun until you get to see him the next time.
Oh, I laugh so hard. It's not even fair. And it's a set appointment at a, you know, tough time of the year, January. Why not go? You know, it's awesome. And you get to see everybody, and it's so cool. Now,
The other thing about it is, none of the people that are walking around have big egos and stuff.
Right.
I mean, you can go up, walk up to Bill, walk up to Jeff, or walk up to Kinzer, and me as someone who has learned from them, I enjoy just the honesty that they give you. It's not like technical that they're talking. It's more like, you know, feeling good about having friendships and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the consistent theme that we've seen with all that's going on, can you guys remember a more exciting time to be a dentist?
Not for me.
And how many years you've been doing this?
Oh, 45, I guess, 45 years. No, it's clearly the most exciting time. I think for me, it becomes fairly specific. The two things that really excite me today are what the orthodontist can do for me as a restorative dentist.
Right.
I treatment plan completely differently now than I did 10 years ago, the interdisciplinary patient.
Right.
Because of temporary anchorage devices and surgically facilitated ortho and all of the things that the orthodontist can do for us and our understanding of how much they can do with airway as well as restorative dentistry, for me, that's really exciting. And the other exciting part is technology. And I'm not an early adopter of technology, but I'm not a dinosaur either. And so it kind of has to be there for a while. And so I've finally gotten on board with the digital smile design technology, Coachman's. And so I'd say those two things are the most exciting thing for me right now. The possibilities of that Coachman's given us, the digital smile design, and what the orthodontist can do for me as a restorative dentist. That's the two things that excite me the most.
Yeah, very cool. What are you most
excited about? To touch more on what Bill says, using the orthodontist and what the orthodontist can do today allows us to do less dentistry.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, much being more conservative, do what's right for the patient. When you think about the 70s and you think about Pankey and Dawson, what were they doing? They were doing a lot of reconstructions. Why? Because we didn't have orthodontists that could move teeth where we wanted them. So they ended up doing a lot more restorative dentistry, maybe good for the pocketbook, but I will tell you this, I think for the patients today with the technology we have, you do much less dentistry because, as Coy says, there's no dentistry better than no dentistry.
Right, right.
So and as an aside to that, actually Bob was ahead of the curve on this.
Really?
Because he was teaching us to do intermediate dentistry and bonded dentistry before it became popular up on the stage. He was doing it as a standard years ago, and it's almost like the technology and the consciousness is caught up with what you were teaching us to do more than 10 years ago. So that's got to make you feel good.
It makes you feel good because, you know, back at Iowa, which is a great bonding school, you got guys like Dennehy and Marcos Vargas, Newton Fall, we were taught to be conservative, and that bonding wasn't a second-class citizen.
Mm.
And what they wanted us to do is really get good at bonding so that you're able to be more conservative. Some people can't afford to have porcelain veneers.
Right.
And so they really stressed adhesive dentistry, bonding, and feeling good about transitioning dentistry. And I know we've talked about it, and you've been doing it now over the last several years, where you don't want to do a crown on a lower anterior.
Right. Mm-hmm.
He will not do a crown on a lower anterior. He's going to do ortho to make it so they can be minimally invasive dentistry, whether it's with bonding or porcelain veneers.
Yep. Yeah, and expand on that, because you said that's the hardest tooth to restore. Why? Like, tell us why.
Well, the worn lower incisor is the bane of the restorative dentist.
Yep.
And if I never had to do another full crown on a lower incisor, my restorative life would be complete.
Yeah.
And the reason that we don't have to do it anymore is because we've got better solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And just by moving those teeth back to their correct positions, as Bob said, we can now do very conservative restorations instead of having to put a lower incisor in a pencil sharpener and take it down until it looks like a toothpick. So, I don't know. We just don't do it anymore. I mean, we essentially just, that's just not part of our treatment regimen anymore.
Yeah, and you guys are world-class educators. You get out there and you see, it isn't just technology. You have to think, right? The thinking, I think what happens here is our thinking just gets challenged. There are so many things you're like, I never thought of. I thought Diamandis did an incredible job on Monday, and he took a lot of things that I was like, he just flipped it, and I'm like, things are better now than they have ever been, and we spend so many times thinking about how difficult or challenging we are. So we have to have both. I think we got to have the technology and better thinking, and that's what this place allows us to be able to do. So dig a little bit further on the ortho interface, restorative interface, because the implications of that, what do you expect to see here in the next couple of years? You're big into DSC. You teach dentists and study clubs all over the place. Every one of us walks into a room and has a wish for these people in this room.
Yeah.
You know, tell us about what's behind the heart you teach.
Okay, so historically, we've been able to intrude teeth orthodontically forever.
Mm-hmm.
And so my oldest case of intruding anterior teeth is more than 25 years old. So it's not a new concept.
Right.
But we didn't have anchorage to intrude posterior teeth up until about 10 years ago. So that was the first major shift for me.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that we could actually intrude posterior teeth and then be able to do more conservative restorations and fewer restorations than if we had to do the full mouth rehab and increase vertical dimension.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, moving from only being able to intrude anterior teeth to being able to intrude posterior teeth was a giant quantum leap forward. The next leap has been in more recent years, and that is when we start to realize that it's not just about intruding teeth and making restorative space, but it's making the volume bigger.
Right.
Because as we become more attuned to the idea of airway, we start to look at patients differently.
Right.
And we see so many of our adult patients who have narrow arches, and now we have this amazing technology that we saw a beautiful presentation from Dr. Kokic today on using mini implant associated or related Sarpy. Instead of Sarpy, it's Marpy. So you put two mini implants in on either side and you open up the palatal suture on adults without a surgical procedure.
Right.
Incredibly exciting. And this is new information that people haven't been talking about in a general way for more than a year or two.
Right.
And so coming to meetings like this, I know that there's a lot of people in the room today that have never heard of Marpy, and now they know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they can go home and talk to their orthodontist about it, and that's the way these seeds germinate in cool programs or symposia like this.
Right, right. You've got a lot of original thought leaders and influencers in the industry. I mean, it's so funny because we had Rouse on earlier. I get corrected all the time. I go, it's a sleep problem. And they go, no, airway. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I'm like, and you wonder where those originating thoughts came that now become common, you know, because palates are changing, right? They are more narrow, and we can do a lot of great restorative dentistry, but the patient still can't breathe. What good have we done? So it's very cool what we see now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah. And I think also, too, one of the things that I hear consistently about you guys are real guys. Like, I think one of the hottest topics in the world is simple, high-quality restorative. Not necessarily over-the-top type things. When you talk about saving teeth, doing the right thing. And you mentioned before we got on, you go, look, there's a lot going on, but what I'm most excited about is just telling the patients the truth.
Yes.
And I think you two are probably the best. Like, you detach yourself from, hey, look, I'm just getting older now. I'm telling people the truth. And you know what? It works. It really does work.
I say, too, to a younger dentist who's a recent grad, you have to be able to communicate.
Yeah.
Because the most successful dentists that I know are the ones that can communicate, and people like to do business with people that they like.
Right.
And if you can explain to the patient what they need and why they need it, and then just be quiet instead of saying, go talk to my treatment coordinator, and then the treatment coordinator has to try to talk to them and tell them what they're overwhelmed. Don't be upset if a patient doesn't accept the treatment plan. They may come back and say, you know, I'm going to do that. Because the last thing that we do is call patients up and say, hey, you ready to do that crown? Ready to do that crown? Because you know Bill and Hygiene, when patients come, they say, no, the tooth hurts when I bite on it. Mm-hmm. And then you tell them that they need a crown. Well, it doesn't hurt that much. You know? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they'll decide when they want to have it done.
Right.
Not me. But I'm always there to help them.
But you're really good letting them know it's their decision. Like, you've used the term referee. I love it. Describe what the referee is. I've never heard anybody say referee.
Yeah, you know what? When I go into the operatory and stuff and I tell them something, they kind of look at me like dumbfounded. I say, wait. I'm just a referee. I call it as I see it. Mm-hmm. It's your mouth, your time, your money. It's your decision what to do. I'm here to facilitate it. Mm-hmm. I used to be offended if I gave a treat plan they didn't accept it. I thought I was like a loser or something.
Right.
And then we as dentists have these big egos that we want everybody to accept us and everybody to like us. And so sometimes I would like, man, I can't tell them what they need because it's going to be too expensive. One thing to remember is don't biopsy a patient's wallet.
Right.
Let them make the decision because you never know who's going to accept that treatment plan.
Right.
You know? And make it affordable. I think with like care credit and financing today, more and more patients can have the treatment that they really need.
Right. And I've learned this from you guys in so many different ways. Diagnosis is it's neutral. You know, sometimes dentists think, well, this patient's going to be overwhelmed. And in our effort to not overwhelm them, we completely underwhelm them in some respects.
We heard Dr. Amsterdam quoted more than once, you know, the most famous periopros guy. We heard him quoted, people quoted him several times at this meeting saying, there can be several treatment plans, but there's only one diagnosis. And you have to have a system of some kind, and there are there's places out there that teach good systematic approach to interdisciplinary treatment planning, but you got to go get it, which I'd like to segue to another idea of what Bob said, and that is the importance of communication.
Right.
Dental school, and I assume there's some young dentists and perhaps dental students listening, dental school is to teach you fundamentally how to do single-tooth dentistry. And that's fine. Single-tooth dentistry needs to be done. I know Bob and I do probably 75-80% single-tooth dentistry in my practice. But that 20 or whatever percent of sophisticated dentistry I have to do or I get to do is what keeps my juices going.
Right.
But once you get out of dental school and start into your journey of dentistry, I've come to believe that leaders and communicators aren't born. They're created.
Right.
And when I lecture to the young dental students at my school in San Antonio, I tell them that if I were you, I would start spending my money, first of all, my CE money, on two things, and that would be leadership training and communication skills. It wouldn't be about how to do a porcelain veneer or about what system to use in the posterior part of the mouth for doing a posterior composite. It would be learning to communicate and to have leadership skills, because you do not come with those, you know, already installed in your hard drive. At least most people don't.
Yeah, yeah, I find that to be true, too, because you could show the relationship on how far somebody goes. And I heard many mentors say this, how well you get to be a communicator will determine how far you become in dentistry, how far you go in dentistry. So it's very, very true. Yeah. Why do so many young dentists come out and maybe not see that? Is that a little bit of youth? Is it a little bit of this? Because there's a part of it. I have my own opinions, but I think there's sometimes you got to come to this. You got to get into the arena with the best thinkers, because the first time I came here, I was overwhelmed. I was like, you know what I mean? Like, and then you start to settle in, you go, no, I feel at home here. There's a lot to learn. And then you embrace the path, the journey for the future. So tell me what you guys see when you look at it.
You know, I think as a young dentist, the hard part is you're overwhelmed for one thing, debt.
Yeah.
All of a sudden you have this debt, and then you have to go out and make money to pay that debt off. And then you want maybe a new house or a new car. And what Bill's saying, you have to be able to communicate. You got to spend the money. You're already in debt anyway. You might as well spend more money and learn how to communicate, and then find somebody who's a mentor. If you can find a mentor that will help you and guide you, it's going to put you years ahead. Because when you find somebody who believes in what you're doing and you see what they're doing, you want to try to copy them. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate because I had a guy that really believed in me. And I'll be honest with you, I never wanted to be on the Seattle Study Club main stage. I never did. And Michael Cohen said, hey, you're ready to go. I said, no, I don't think I am ready to go. He goes, no, you're ready to go. Yeah. And he's almost like a coach or something, not wanting you to put you in the game to have you fail. He's there to make you successful.
Yeah.
And he kind of sees stuff. And so when somebody believes in what you're doing, it's incredible what you can accomplish. You know, Bill wrote a book on global diagnosis.
Yeah.
I have the book. Every time I hear him speak, we're friends. Mm-hmm. But I would not give him a compliment if I didn't mean what I said.
Right.
The book is incredible. He has got a gift for being able to break things down. Mm-hmm. If somebody has a gummy smile, there's five questions he asks. Mm-hmm. And boom, boom, puts you in a treatment plan where you can diagnose the problem.
Right.
And these are the treatment options. There may be more than one way to roof a house.
Mm-hmm.
But the ultimate outcome is going to be the end goal. And so when I look at stuff, and I was talking to him, I said, man, I'm sure you sold all your books out. And he said, no, you know, we have not sold them all out. And I tell you what, I would definitely look at Quintessence and Global Diagnosis. And I'm not saying that because we're pals. Because
Right. Believe
me,
totally.
You look at this book and just look at it, it'll change the way you practice. And when you have Christian Coachman say, one of the best educators he's heard in dentistry is Bill Robbins, that says something.
Yeah.
I'm proud of him. I mean, he's such a humble guy, and this is not because we're pals, but mm-hmm. I just love the guy, and I'm really proud, and what he has done for dentistry is amazing, really amazing.
Yeah, well, two things. Number one, when people spend their whole lives writing a book, it's worth it to pick it up, because I'm sure you've had some mistakes and failures that have, you know, because what happens is you come back to the, okay, I've learned this over and over and over again, don't do this, you know what I mean? That's the first thing. And the second thing is that once you start to use and apply these things, you're like, oh my gosh, it works, and it speeds up the process. You don't make, because you can make a mistake once, but to repeat it, that's stupid. It's just stupid to do that.
All right, so I want to circle back around a little bit to that speeding up the process.
Yeah.
And back to the younger dentist.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. There's limitation of funds that any young dentist has, generally speaking, to spend on their continuing education budget.
Right.
And there is absolutely one smart way more than any other, and that's to join a study club.
Agreed.
Now, I'm not pandering for the Seattle Study Club system. That's where we are this week. And I happen to think Seattle Study Club system is one of, if not the best systems out there.
Right.
But we all know there's other study club systems.
Right.
And when Bob said that it's important to try to find a mentor, the absolute best place, the best chance you have of finding a mentor is joining a study club, a local study club.
Right.
Generally speaking, you can afford that. Most young dentists can afford the cost of joining one local study club. You're generally going to get anywhere from 8 to 10 meetings a year. You're going to hear speakers. You're going to treatment plan together. You're going to have webinars. But most importantly, you're going to be able to network with other dentists in your community. You're going to find out those that have similar values to yours and that are willing to help you along the way.
Right.
So that's my piece of advice. My first piece was to get some leadership and communication training. And the second is to join a study club, at least one study club.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have so many thoughts on that, because think about this. The best educators in the world are coming to your town. And some dentists say, well, I can't afford $1,000, $1,200 a year. I'm like, what are you talking about? Sometimes you just have to think better. Now, use the word limitations. As a restorative dentist, you have limitations. When these are done, you're done.
Right.
Your body can almost, but there's no limitations on how well you can think. And the only way you're going to sharpen your thinking is putting yourself in a place where people can. Somebody said this earlier today, but it's true. I never want to be the smartest person in the room. If I'm the smartest, I'm in the wrong room. You know what I mean? Like, I feel inadequate sometimes around you.
No,
in a good way. You're like, that is brilliant. But, like, and you're so humble, you're like, okay, you just got to think better. And I'm like, you're right.
when I facilitate treatment planning sessions with study clubs,
yeah.
In other words, that's the reason for being there that day.
Right.
And either I'll bring my cases and we'll treatment plan them together, or even better, they have their cases.
Yeah.
And well, they present them, break up into group treatment plan, then we come back and go through, you know, the exercise.
Yeah.
My first rule, when I set out a whole set of rules, okay. When I'm facilitating treatment planning, and the first rule is, I'm not the smartest guy in the room.
Yeah.
And that begs the question. Well, and the second rule is, the less I speak, the better.
That's a good rule.
And therefore, if I'm not the smartest guy in the room, and it's better for me to be quiet most of the time, then why am I even here? Uh-huh. And the answer is because I've got a system.
Yeah.
Right? I'm here to help you with a systematic approach to looking at that more complex patient.
Right. But you're forcing them to think. You're not going to give them the answer. You're going to let them struggle a little bit.
Exactly.
And then when you bring the answer, it's your answer. I just facilitated the process.
Or it's an answer a small A. It's not the big answer.
Yeah.
It's an answer. Yeah. And if you're not the smartest guy in the room, it's not that uncommon for their answer to be better than my answer.
Yes. Right.
Which is really cool when that happens. When you show yours and they go, well, yeah, but you could have done it this way. And you go, good point.
Right.
Good point.
Yeah.
So I love that part of it.
The thing that makes you successful, though, is your ego's not big enough that you got to take what they said and keep it as your own.
Right.
I mean, I've done some, when I do a wax up and I want to have stops, I use a Richemuller pad and you do a full mouth wax up. And a student comes up to me or one of the dentists says, I got a better idea. Well, how? He goes, because sometimes you push and the retromolar pad moves. He says, what I do is from the wax up, I cut some of the wax up in the middle of the tooth. And when I put the impressionator, there's a stop on the tooth. So the tooth stop. And then when I make the temper, I just fill in that little hole. I say, you know what? That's a better way than I was doing it.
Oh, yeah.
And I say, you know what? Whenever I lecture, I'm going to give you credit for it.
Yeah.
Because it's their idea. Listen, when you quit learning, look at it. You've been doing it for 45 years.
Yeah.
You didn't have to do this.
No. So if you walked around this meeting, do you know how many people are here?
I have no idea.
Let's say 400.
Yeah.
Let's say there's 400.
Okay.
If you walk around this meeting and you say, everyday dentistry, right? And then you put a blank after it to have them fill it in, 375 of those people are going to put Bob Margin. Well, that's what made him famous.
Yeah.
You know, he always stands up in his all shucks, you know, I'm going to Walmart kind of guy.
Because your patients get dressed up to go to Walmart.
Exactly.
Not the Dollar Palace.
And then he shows common sense dentistry.
Right.
That's why everybody loves. Well, I mean, it sounds like we're have a love fest going here, but he's the most popular person in the Seattle Study Club circuit.
Yeah.
And that's because he talks about everyday dentistry.
Mm-hmm.
He's never comes across as a fancy guy, even though he drives a Bentley.
Right.
He never comes across as a fancy guy.
And you don't practice in Manhattan, New York. You practice, where do you practice?
Des Moines.
Des Moines. Okay.
Des Moines.
Now I say that lovingly. I love Des Moines, but you're not, you know, you don't have this patient base that's exclusive. They're not parking their jets outside or flying their helicopters in. To your point exactly, here's what I hear from young dentists. They're like, oh, I could use like 30 things that he mentioned. Like, I can apply that right away because I have those things happen every day. You know?
So even though we come from different parts of the world, our hair is a little different, you know, we are like cut from the same piece of cloth.
Oh, you are.
Because when we're around all these people, you know, like when you're with Rouse and Kinzer and those people, it's like me and Margis are country and those guys are country club. Isn't that right?
Exactly. You heard it here first.
Country.
Country.
We're country. That's for sure.
I didn't say it.
I will tell you this. And like he says, like a love fest, we're talking on each other. But it's totally honest.
Yeah.
When I met Bill Robbins was lecturing at the Texas Dental Association meeting. And I go into his room. I kind of sneak in.
Uh-huh.
I sneak in. Yeah. I'm sitting toward the back. Because I had read all his articles on the gummy smile. I said, I've got to listen to this guy. He's incredible. And what he does is he comes back from the podium before he starts and he sits down next to me. He recognized me somehow and said, hey, I know who you are.
Yeah.
He had read some of the articles I had written. I'd read some of the articles. The whole key is to share the knowledge.
Yeah.
You want to share it. There's no competition. My former partner used to say, take me down the basement, and he'd show me all the dead files. He'd go, do you think all these patients are dead? Because these patients aren't dead. These are people who left your practice. They didn't like it. It's not a competition.
Yeah.
Don't look. You want to help people. You get enjoyment out of telling people how to do something.
Yeah.
That's why you're successful.
And you can see it in your eyes when you teach.
Oh, yes.
There's nothing that probably gives you more joy than when you see the spark. You see that moment where a young dentist is like, oh my goodness. And then they come back and it's like almost layering porcelain. They have another layer of confidence, another layer of confidence, and now they've become somebody special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's funny because we're all geared to look at the teeth and the lips. I mean, we spent our whole life doing that.
Right.
But when you're looking at a smile, it's the eyes.
Yeah.
It's the eyes that smile.
And when you know
you're getting that perfect photograph or that perfect video, it's almost got nothing to do with the mouth.
Right.
It's all about their eyes because they can do the setup smile, you know, or they're trying to do it. But when you video them and you get them going and they're talking about their dog or their kids and all of a sudden their eyes start to sparkle. That's the one. That's the smile.
Yeah. And it's so cool. You guys are living examples of this. Jason Stoner said today, he goes, but this is hard. Every day we transform smiles, but once in a while we transform lives.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not every patient, but the same thing in education. Yeah. People's lives, the trajectory of their lives are changed because they met somebody. And, you know, in a bigger perspective, God created us as relational beings. We couldn't do this without the help of each other. Yeah. You know, you can't have a practice by yourself without great team members. You can't. You know, you were in a day and age where preceptorships, you know, that was common talk. And now it's the landscape. So we need the help of other people to become successful in this whole realm.
And the greatest thing, the greatest gift of being a teacher is when one of your students becomes your teacher.
Yeah.
And I'm experiencing that in my office right now. My young associate, Marcella, was actually a dental assistant in my office. And now she's a prosthodontist in my office.
That's amazing.
And so in not that many years, she's gone from sitting across from me as a dental assistant to now coming back. And it's not that she set herself up to be a teacher in our practice, but she is. Mm-hmm. She's bringing all kinds of wonderful knowledge and information and photographic skills and all back to our office. And so when one of your students becomes your teachers, that's mm-hmm. the greatest payoff of all. Yes?
I'll tell a story. Back in 92, Marcos Vargas was a grad student of mine at Iowa. Marcos came and was so talented to begin with. And look at what Marcos Vargas has become. One of the best top five bonders in the world. Mm-hmm. All the research on dentin and bonding and adhesives is Marcos Vargas. And so when you help somebody, then all of a sudden they have achieved even more. That's just great gratification. I thank the people who made me who I am today.
Yeah.
Because you know what? I think it's important to remember. Never forget where you came from to get where you are today.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that aren't going to be successful, they're going to be on the circuit for a year or two. Or ones that walk around thinking that they're unbelievable and everybody's going to listen to them and they have no story, they don't tell the truth, they're going to be gone. They're going to be gone. You know, I really think that coming to Seattle Study Club, the difficult thing for me sometimes is when I go back and I see what can be done.
Right.
Right.
I can see what, but I don't necessarily have the whole team that can give me what I need. That's probably the most frustrating thing for me, even after 32 years of practice, knowing what to do, but having the skill of the periodontist, the skill of the surgeon, the skill of the orthodontist. That's where the Seattle Study Club, everybody learns together. I think it's important to bring your teams out here.
Right.
What do you think, Bill?
Yeah, for sure. In fact, earlier in my career, when I would come to meetings like this, and I would sit and look at the greatest American and the greatest European and the greatest South American dentists, show their unbelievable work.
Mm-hmm.
Not only is the work beautiful, but the photography was awesome, everything about it. And it did two things to me. One thing it did is give me a vision that clearly it could be better and I could be better. But the other thing it did to me was make me feel diminished to some degree that I knew probably I could never do that.
Right.
And so I've had to get over that. And one of the things that's helped me get over it is when really honest people like Bob and most of the people speaking here are honest about the fact that this is a life journey.
Right.
And that they did this crown, this single central, four times.
Right.
You know, tell people you did it four times.
Right.
Don't put it up there with the assumption that it came from the lab and you put it in and it's perfect. You know?
Right.
Let us know the truth. And so I don't feel diminished anymore because I know I'll never be able to do dentistry as beautifully as some of the things we saw today on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm okay with that now.
Yeah.
And I also know that sometimes that stuff is their very best case.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
They pick their very best case and put it up on the show.
Right.
But most of those guys also show they're less than perfect. And that's what I really love to see.
Well, and I think there's a big shift. You said it earlier, you know, you used to think that the best restorative dentists, they did full mouth, but 75% of what you do is single tooth.
Yeah.
You prepare yourself for the 25%.
I will say this. Yesterday, you'll probably agree with me, Joe Kahn, Loma Linda, incredible speaker,
incredible dentist,
dentist. But the beauty of it was he showed his failures.
He did.
Yeah.
And he could have stopped at 3 years and said, look how beautiful this is.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody would think he's incredible. And then we go home thinking, man, I'm never going to be able to do that.
Right.
But then when he says, well, let me show you the 5-year post-op, and all of a sudden stuff starts going downhill. It makes you realize that we're human. And stuff can happen. And it's somewhere where you go when somebody's telling the truth, instead of showing a 1 or 2 or 3 year post-op, show these different things, it makes you realize that stuff can happen.
Well, and that's the mark of a great educator. It's never up here. It's never here. You're, as an audience member, you see yourself in the story. When you watch Bob Margus, I'm not watching Bob Margus. You're going, oh my gosh, that happens every day to me. Oh my gosh, you're like, he's real. Like, oh my gosh. And I hear that from you too. Yeah. It's the authenticity factor is, it's critical in the learning process. So,
yeah. We saw, actually, Dr. Kahn's lecture will be memorable, I think, for a lot of us, because we really hold him up as one of the great teachers. And yet, his whole lecture basically was showing the potential problems with the papillas related to implants. And he picked very difficult cases, and he did like masterful dentistry to get papillas built back, but they weren't maintained. That will be a lecture that was meaningful to me, perhaps more than many of the others, because it was honest and it's where I live.
Right, right. That's a tough stage. That is a very, we've all spoken on that. It's the best educators in the world are now audience members.
Oh, no.
So Dr. Kahn, like that's memorable for so many different ways. But we've all been there. You're not going to get anything less than spectacular, superior education and thought leadership here. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And back to Dr. Kahn. I don't even know him. I've never even met him, but I've certainly known him from afar. But I've seen his work, and it's some of the most beautiful work on earth.
Right.
And he only had about 30 minutes in his lecture yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And he chose, in that, in legacy, this is about your legacy, and he chose to show some honest, less than perfect results. And he's got hours of awesome results, but that's not what he chose to show.
That's
it definitely is an anxiety-producing stage.
Right.
Because it's the people that you've respected, many of them all of your life, your professional lives, are either sitting in the audience in front of you, or they're on before or after you.
Right. You've got all those people. But then you also got emerging talents like Becca Bacow. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I mean, these are orthodontists. It was spectacular. I thought there's just so many gems and pearls that, you know, Michael Cohen does. There's only one Michael Cohen, but he knows how to construct a program that is just... You got a good combination of all of that.
There were quite a few young guns here this time.
There are.
By design.
Yeah.
And theirs is some of the best. I've enjoyed their lecture. Like, Dr. Bacow yesterday was one of the best of the whole deal.
Right.
So, yeah, that's the other cool thing.
The world needs more people like that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
We do in our profession. So.
I mean, they've seen us a lot.
Right.
Honestly, they've seen our stuff a lot. But she was brand new to the stage.
Yeah.
And some of the others.
Kyle Stanley was on the stage.
Absolutely. Yeah. Kyle.
Marco Brindis.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Josh Austin. So there was a bunch of wonderful young speakers that, I don't know, it really makes me feel good about the future.
Yeah.
Seeing these folks up on the stage.
Yeah.
The other thing is, I'll tell you, I mean, I've spoke hundreds and hundreds of times at major meetings. I was actually apprehensive, a little bit nervous.
Because you said that. Yeah.
I was nervous because when you think about quoting the literature and the people who wrote the literature or the article,
they're right there.
The audience, I better get this article right because they're sitting there wondering, this isn't me, this is them, and you're quoting it, you better get it right.
Yeah,
and I mean, you hundreds and hundreds of times, if you're not nervous on that, say, I think, you know, maybe you're not going to be really prepared.
Yeah.
You know? Bring your edge. Don't quite have your edge if you're not having a little anxiety.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah. So as you guys can see, this is the kind of stuff you experience. You get to hang out with these guys. You get to know them. You get to know them personally, professionally. I ask you guys this question, and we'll end on this one all the time. Young dentists watching this, what would you say to them that's probably embracing 3 to 4 decades in front of them? You know, looking back, what would you say, or what would you even say now to a young dentist?
You go first.
I would say start out from the beginning with great integrity.
Mm-hmm.
Think about what you're going to be doing on that patient and what would you want to be done on your family member or yourself. How would you want to be treated? Tell the truth. Be honest with the patients and let them make decisions. But you have to be able to understand what your limitations are. Mm-hmm. Somebody comes in that may need porcelain veneers. And you may not have ever done any porcelain veneers, and you look at it and say, wow, if I send this out, this could be $10,000 or $15,000. Then all of a sudden, you do the veneers, and you have failures, and then you're probably never going to do another veneer, or you're going to say veneers are terrible.
Mm-hmm.
If you have the skill set to be able to do it, then feel confident enough to be able to do it. But if you don't, be willing to refer that out, because you know, you're always going to remember what you did, and when someone says, oh, implants are bad because it failed, that gives it a bad name. When you know yourself, because you've been practicing for 40 years, that it works, I think really educate yourself, have integrity, tell the truth, and look forward to a great career. Continually learn, because I have friends of mine who graduated 35 years ago, and they hate dentistry. They're plugging amalgams all day. They're having to deal with PPOs. They're miserable. If you go into it for the right reason, you're going to make money. You're going to be successful. Don't let money be the deciding factor.
Right.
Do what's right for the patient. That's how I would feel.
Amen, brother.
I don't really have a lot to add to that. I mean, what he said, and I feel the same. One of the cool things about these symposia are that we get these outside speakers. So it's not just dentists. It's also these world leaders. And we had a speaker that's a world-class futurist. The keynote that spoke the first day, Dr. Diamantis, and he gave us all kinds of insight as to what dentistry and life may be like in 15 or 20 years. Well, for me, so much of it was mind-blowing that I couldn't even conceptualize the idea that my brain might actually be attached to an AI brain in the cloud, and that AI brain may actually impact the way that I think and help me with my judgment. I can't even understand what that means. That may never happen while I'm still alive. So all I can talk about for a young dentist in the future is sort of my old-fashioned skill set and knowledge base. And it comes back to what Bob said, and that's integrity. If you start out compromising your dentistry for reasons that we can all think of, if you start out that way, it's very difficult to move the pendulum back from a position of not being in a place of integrity to moving back. It just commonly doesn't happen. It's very difficult to do.
Agreed.
So my piece of old-fashioned advice would be is to start out in your integrity and always stay there. And if you can't be in your integrity where you're practicing, then that's not the right place for you to be practicing.
Yeah, that is so powerful. And I'm going to put a cherry on top of that because you remind me all the time we got to leave the campfire in better condition than we found it. I love that. It's simple, but it's true. You got to leave behind something we're proud of. So.
Yep, absolutely.
Good stuff. It's good. Gentlemen, I am so grateful for your time, your friendship, your expertise, but mostly what you guys give back. Profession. That's the best part of it, and that's kind of the heartbeat behind this whole meeting. And again, if you haven't been, you just have to come. Like, you just got to find a way to get here. So thank you guys for being on. So if you guys haven't had these guys at your study club, you have to. They are the best you'll find anywhere. And so thank you guys for watching the Best Practices Show. If you enjoyed today, which I know you did, just do us a huge favor, hit the share button, and keep watching the Best Practices Show. We'll see you guys soon.